And a very warm welcome to our panel discussion that is about to begin today. We have our panelists, Brother David from UK, Sister Lotta from Sweden, and Sister Elizabeth from USA, and we have Sister Pratibha from South Africa interviewing them. And the topic would be creating a stage of equanimity. So I would let Sister Pratibha introduce the panelists and a few words about Sister Pratibha. Sister Pratibha came to Baba at a very young age of 15, and she has been with Baba for over 38 years, and she had a fortune of serving in many places in South Africa, Durban, Cape Town, and she's currently based in Johannesburg. And she also has a very good experience of serving in interfaith gatherings and also especially with women's organizations. So today Sister Pratibha would interview the panel on the topic, creating the stage of equanimity. So over to Sister Pratibha.
Om Shanti. And it's lovely to be with everyone here. I think I'm going to treat this not as an interview, but as a conversation. We know each other for a long time, and I don't have formal introductions for our panelists, but just to say, Brother David, he's been with Baba for many, many years. I think he calls himself Adi David. You know what that means? The first David to come to Baba. And I think in 1978, 76, around that time, yeah. So a soul with a lot of experience. But I think what I really always appreciate of Brother David is a lovely sense of humor, depth of humor. So it makes Gyan very digestible. And then we have Sister Lotta, and Sister Lotta has also been with Baba for many, many years. I got to know Sister Lotta particularly during the self-managing leadership program and had some trainings with her. And what I appreciate of Sister Lotta, she's a very creative soul. I still remember some of your cartoons, Lotta. And also a soul that's very light, very enthusiastic, and a good friend. And then Sister Elizabeth, another very creative soul from San Francisco, looking after Baba's retreat center, Anubhuti. And I think many of us know her through her beautiful singing. I think it's the first sort of double foreigner who started singing in Hindi, isn't it? So very well known and loved in Bharat for singing in Hindi. Yeah, long time ago. So lovely to for us to just to be together and have this conversation on equanimity. When I looked at the topic, I was recalling that before I came to Baba, you know, when I used to read the Gita, one of the things in the Gita it always said, and it sort of stuck with me, was that the sign of a yogi is that they will have that stage of equanimity. So it's almost like through our practices, that is what we achieve ultimately, that state where there is total balance within, there's total stability, a state of being uninfluenced. So it's quite a high stage, and I'd like to just explore it through personal experiences more than looking at it from a theoretical perspective. So the first thing I'd like to draw from each one of you is your experience of having witnessed someone responding from a place of equanimity. It could be a dadi's response, or it could even be your own response in a particular situation. And having witnessed that, what impression did that leave in you? What What impact did that leave in you when you saw someone really coming from that place of equanimity in a situation that could have been challenging? So, I'm going to, whoever feels inspired to respond to that, feel free. Yeah.
For my first song. I was in Delhi, ORC, the retreat place, and it wasn't quite finished, and there was a part that was not quite finished, and the scaffolding collapsed. And the scaffolding, you know, that was supporting an archway, and it was clear that there was a couple of the workers who were actually under the rubble. And I observed that a lot of the workers and quite a few of the BKs sort of started diving in, which is a kind of a normal reaction. But one of the seniors was sort of sitting, and she just remained extremely calm and sort of put her hand up and said, there's too much rubble. If you move anything, it'll be dangerous and something might fall, so we need to get some lifting gear. And that's what happened. And I thought, wow, that was very practical and safer.
And the impact that left on you in terms of...
It was a good, great example. I mean, many of you know, used to be a bit of a sportsman. So when I thought there was a good chance of going for something, like getting the ball, I'd really go for it. I mean, seriously go for it. But if I felt it's not really a good chance of getting it, I would just step back and save my energy and just wait. I used to do that with exams. People thought I was crazy. I would just walk in very late, not speak to anyone, not look at anyone, and then walk straight out again. So I think I had a sort of a chilledness about me somewhere.
I can actually not think of anything. At the moment, there's no such memory that's coming up.
There was an experience that I had in a small class that I was taking, and it was a meditative class, and someone got up and said, "This is a bunch of hogwash. This doesn't make any sense." And I wanted to kind of come to the teacher's rescue. I was kind of lost for words. I didn't know what to say. I just kind of went, the teacher handled it so well. And it just made me go, what a great weapon. They just remained cool. And I could tell it was hurtful that the teacher was, you know, wasn't bulletproof, but I watched how the soul adjusted to the situation, and it was such a lesson for me, because I tend to react, so it was really good.
And often we see that when we react, you actually feed into the situation rather than actually shifting the energy of the situation. Yeah. You want to add something, David?
No.
Okay. Getting ready. Great. How do you define the stage of equanimity for yourself? How do you understand it to be?
Well, the first thing one does, don't be Judy, and we look in the dictionary and find out what it actually means. I mean, do you think the translators will understand this word equanimity? But it, we've kind of, composure, they talk about composure, and they talk about basically remaining calm and stable and composed under stressful situations. And being a children's dentist for nearly 30 years, long, I'm retired now, I was able to observe the opposite of that for many years. What made people feel a little bit ruffled. And, yeah, I mean, it's our basic teaching, isn't it? Don't you think? Om Shanti. I mean, that's the theory. It's just that when we're actually out on the battlefield, it doesn't always work like that, does it? Haven't you found? Elizabeth.
Did you say a battlefield?
I meant a field of action.
Oh, field.
Our learning. Our learning.
Yeah. Just never mind the minds.
The
field minds, right. I remember once asking Mohini Didi had asked a group of us, this was some time ago, and so it was before Peace Village, so some time ago, and she said, okay, someone tell me what does balance mean, or no, what is it, perfection, what is the definition of perfection? And I piped up, I was one of the first ones to pipe up, and I said, perfect balance. It means to be balanced. And she goes, no, it doesn't mean that at all. And then she used that to begin to explain that it's fullness. Perfection simply means you have all the arts and they're ready. And I'm glad that I had that experience because it made me think about this. It's not balance of a tightrope or a razor blade, however you think life is for you. It's not, perfection is not that. And I really thought about this. It's this fullness. And this year, you know, especially when it comes to karma that was brought up the other day, does Baba do it for me? Oh, you remember this? You know, oh, Baba, he did it. You know, Baba did it. Well, if I did something negative, well, who did that? You know, oh, Maya did it, right? And but I have no issue with that. But it still came to this notion that I had about balance and equanimity, and that Baba comes to purify us. He comes to purify the soul. That's his job. He's not going to do it for us. He's not going to wash the dishes for us. He's not going to sing the song for us. He's not going to design or plan for us. But the thought, the image that came this morning was like he picks us up from the dust of extraneous thought, our concerns, our worries, our meanderings, this maze of thought. And he brings clarity so that we can do the obvious. It's not when we're stuck in our menagerie of planning. But there was just this beautiful thought, like he picks us up and brings that clarity. And then it's impossible for me to do the wrong thing. And so when things happen, and they will happen because they're supposed to happen, and they come to say goodbye. All these events come to give a namaste, even the good ones, the happy ones, and the negative ones. So for me, it means that I give it permission to move on. I can't hold on to the happiness. No, I didn't think of that. That's good. I can't hold on to the happiness, and I can't hold on to the sorrow. I have to be really stable on the drama. I really have faith in the drama, that she really is helping me move forward. So that's my thought on that.
Beautiful. Lotta, you would like to share your thoughts?
What came to mind for the first question was, of course, Bap Dada. His vision of the whole 25,000 crowd and completely stable. And what often happens in the crowd is somebody screaming, something crazy happening, and in the crowd we start looking, and Baba just completely stable. So that's my image of equanimity, and I find that image is so attractive. And I feel that's also an image of royalty. Not being beyond or above, but having total trust. And when you ask about the stage of equanimity, I feel for me is not to take sides. Never taking sides, because everyone belongs to me. So I felt like the daddies used to be like that very clearly. They never took sides. And it's so easy to be swayed when we see things in the newspaper or we follow political developments. But we talked about it the other day, some of us, that we already know. You know, we already know why things are happening. There's no question of asking why. But to be stable like Baba in that way and don't take sides, I feel, is for me.
It's such a attractive stage, isn't it? To be trusting completely, as you're saying, not being swayed by things and staying present but not influenced. So it's not like a withdrawal from things. You're present, but you're uninfluenced. But just wanting to know, like, sometimes we do react, or we have reacted in the past. And I was just, you know, reflecting that the stage of being in the state of equanimity is very linked to our stage of self-respect as well. So when we've had that experience of maybe reacting to something or being affected by something, it does impact our sense of self-respect. So what efforts have you made when you found yourself reacting to almost restore yourself again, restore your sense of equanimity again, without feeling in any way less than? Or feeling ashamed of having reacted, but just coming back to your state of self-respect again. So moments when you have sort of reacted or got affected, what did you do? What were efforts or what awareness or practices did you engage in to bring yourself back to that state of self-respect and equanimity?
I think for me, just to be what I feel for myself, because I do react, and sometimes I react very strongly, and to stop at that time, because when I react, the consequence of that comes back to me. So often the one who has the most bitter experience is me. And so in the past I used to blame myself, and that wasn't helpful, because it becomes an evil cycle and your self-respect is not increasing but is decreasing. So in later years I found myself more patient with myself, wanting to look at it more properly. Why did I react like that? What am I afraid of? And not to think that I'm not afraid, but rather admitting I'm actually afraid. I need to get a tissue, I'm coming back soon.
Well, until you get back. It was interesting what Lota had said about not taking sides, but then also when perhaps someone opposes me, and, you know, being ever ready at every moment, I mean, that's the art. But at least for me, I feel I've achieved something if I don't react. And then there's an aftermath, there's sort of an after effect, ripple effect after. And just to breathe in that moment and just know that everyone, now this sounds like a fluffy statement, you know, everyone's innocent, you know, but but they are, right? We all, every one of us is innocent. And even in taking sides, now it's just so ridiculous, it's impossible. How can you possibly take sides on any issue? So just knowing that the other person is under an influence, and I might be someone that triggers I call them pop-ups. You know, on the computer you get these pop-ups. You know, you're going along and then all of a sudden this pop-up. And so it's like a sanskara that projects an image onto the drama, onto the scene. And they'll see you as their, whatever it is, their mother, their father, their whoever, their ex, their something. But it's none of my business. But I just believe in them. That's what gives me breathing space. And in my mind, I just kind of go, I believe in you. I understand. But that's just what I do. And they're not going to respond favorably right away, are they? It's just to keep me from reacting. And you have to allow them to find their breath, their space, their process. And sure enough, they figure it out. Just as when I witness someone not buying into the drama or the scene or the pop-up, they didn't buy into it, or Bap Dada just went, yeah, every kulpa, this happens. And it's sort of giving faith to the other person to find their equanimity. If I remain balanced and have faith in you, and I know this is hard, breathe, and I keep breathing, then perhaps they'll find their breath. And I've found that to be helpful, very helpful.
And it's such a beautiful way of showing respect. Because you're almost, in responding like that, you're almost saying, I know you better than this reaction right now. You know, it's like almost in a quiet way, reassuring that you're seeing something deeper in that soul. That's beautiful. David, any thoughts from you?
Sort of jumping back to this thing of perfection, balance and stuff. You know, you're talking about fullness, because Baba's balance is 100% on either side, not 50-50. So I like this idea of stuff being fullness. Just repeat the question.
Moments when I have reacted or been challenged.
Right.
How do I bring myself back to that state of balance?
It depends. Okay. Depends on my mood, depends on my energy levels, depends which side of the bed I've got up on. sometimes the sisters at the center will say to me, is this a good time to talk this through? And I say, no. I'm going to hit a few golf balls or kick a few cans down the street, and maybe we'll talk about this tomorrow. So I think it's kind of knowing where you are. This thing of reacting, it's like a failure, isn't it? I mean, okay, I know it's black and white, but I was listening to a podcast on elite athletes who'd missed out on an Olympic medal by, in some cases, 1/100th of a second. And the interviewer, who was a sports person himself, an Olympian, was saying, how did you feel about that? And, of course, they reacted differently. But one was gutted, one decided not to give up, and blah, blah, blah. But one of the guys said, you know, in sport and in life, he said, either you win or you learn. And I thought, wow, I grabbed that quote. I thought, that's good, isn't it? Either you win or you learn. And that, I've stopped beating myself up. And I like this thing of what you mentioned, self-respect, because I was actually thinking this morning, it's all about self-respect. And I, you know, like for myself, I was pretty good at most sports, and yet I'd still have this hesitancy looking at to see whether I'd been selected for the team, which was a bit ridiculous, really, because I was actually captain. But and the captains do get dropped, by the way. And I could see, gosh, that is such a deep thing that nothing's. There's a part of me inside that just nothing's ever good enough. Not in a gross way, but you know, you do something nice, you know, you do a talk and or something, and you people come up and really found it useful because obviously Baba's inspired you to say something, and yet inside, oh, you know, I could have done that better. No, we shouldn't miss that. I should miss that point, and I didn't do that, but now. I've changed this round because I thought this is just a habit, and the only way to change a habit is to change it. And so when my mind starts going, oh, you know, it's okay, but you could have done this, that, and the other, I'm saying to myself, oh, excuse me, you're talking to the wrong guy here. You're talking to the David of 2 minutes ago or 5 minutes ago, and actually I'm not that same David, I'm different, so there's no point in really having this conversation with me because you're not talking to the right person. It sounds a bit funny to do that, but I've actually finding it's worked, and I like this thing of being innocent. You know, karma, someone said, you know, everyone's responsible but we're not to blame. So it's a nice, you know, because obviously if you knew better or you were seeing things clearer or you just had more experience, you wouldn't have reacted. So you can't. I think it's, for me, it has been and is really important to just keep seeing the best. You know, Daddy G's, one of her slogans was, see the best and forget the rest. And I thought, oh, that's nice, I like that. Because we have, I mean, okay, I'm sure it must be for all of us, we have such a deep, deep, deep habit of, well, you know, negative thinking, basically, but of not seeing our greatness, or our goodness, of what we've achieved. And it's very debilitating. I mean, it's taken me a long time to come through this. And I still don't get it right all the time. But I feel now, I feel like I've turned a corner. And you know, even people say something nice to you when you've done something. And I would, yeah, and kind of try to deflect it. And now I'm thinking, actually, yeah, Baba helped, but actually, yeah, that was okay. and I'm allowing myself to accept a compliment's not quite the right thing because it's Baba in that sense, but I'm thinking, yeah, I did prepare okay for that, and what I share was kind of okay, so that's good. And it could have been, you know, you could add, there's always room for improvement, isn't there? So, I don't know if that's answered your question, but it's more like a mindset that I've changed, actually.
Beautiful. You know, I was just thinking that one aspect of equanimity is also this thing about having love for all equally, in a way. And Dadiji was such a great example of that. You really felt it in her drishti, that sense of total respect for everyone, no matter who it was. And that's quite a high stage to sort of achieve. And I guess on one level we can say it always comes back to that practice of soul consciousness, you know, to go beyond the roles, to go beyond the forms and just focus on the soul within. But one challenge that comes up in our relationships is that when I've taken sorrow, and it's like there's a memory that gets imprinted because of that experience of sorrow, that influences your attitude more than anything else in terms of how you relate to people and things like that. So how have you all worked with that in terms of that, you know, to really finish those traces of sorrow, to cleanse the attitude again? Because I think that's real subtle work that has to happen, and yet it influences attitude and drishti a lot. Yeah.
So now, uninvited, we enter the field of trauma. So sorrow is connected to pain, which are, what you say, hurts in the soul. And if they are not healed, they will come up in the form of reactions or blocks in relationships. So personally, I'm very interested in exploring the field of trauma for this reason of healing the pain of the past, because otherwise it's very difficult to move ahead. And I feel the understanding of just to be trauma-informed widens my perspective, because I'm thinking I have to be soul conscious, but sometimes it's just a mantra in my head, but I'm actually not. I'm still a victim of my past or the things that holds me back. So I think I should have pure heart, and then a certain person come up and a certain memory, I meet a certain person and there is a certain memory, and I feel, I cannot be neutral. And I don't feel bad actually in relation to them, but I feel bad about myself that I have those feelings. And so that prompts me that I want to heal those wounds, because they might have played a role in a situation that was hurtful for me. But understanding karma, I understand it's my karma that needs to be healed. And I feel taking care of that is also a gesture of self-respect and love for the self, wanting to take care of those hurts and not feeling guilty about it or feeling bad about it. So that gives me hope.
Yeah, thank you, Lota, because you reminded me of something. Because sometimes it's difficult to witness your own mistakes, right? But then what if somebody you really respect witnesses your mistakes? And you spend the rest of your life trying to fix it, rectify it.
prove them wrong, you know. But it just makes it worse, doesn't it? Do you think? You know? So then, but as you were talking, I kind of got a little tickle. It was a feeling like, yes, yes, yes. Because the first thing I had faith in was drama. You know, because the theatrical background that I've had. And I always sort of saw that everyone is an actor. They're all playing their parts. And these people that have witnessed my mistake were designed to be there as a witness, to help me, to mirror, and that they're actually my friend, that they too are my friend, and that even that whatever inner child or whatever who seeks that friendship with the self, does that make sense? Am I getting too esoteric? But the soul consciousness, you know, how to embrace soul consciousness. And in my mind, and perhaps maybe why the honeymoon period of Brahman life is so charming, is I really feel Baba embracing that inner child. And you could almost go through any series of events and it doesn't matter, you know. But then as we mature, take on more responsibilities, then we get invested. We get invested. We want an outcome. And that's where I saw, oh, the needle is stuck in the record. So how to keep, so balancing, if I could use this as a metaphor, remember those record players? And the needle on the record, it has to be just so delicately touching. And if I get invested, then I'm stuck in the drama, and notice how it repeats. Oh, here we go again. Oh, here we go again. But then when I go, wait a minute, and so I changed it, this person that witnessed my mistake, and I went, thank you, in a way of not so much to the person, but that the design, that the drama is designed to help me to move forward. And that's where it gives me a tickle, like, you know, it's okay. It's all designed. Does that kind of... Okay.
Well, I once saw a cartoon with a cat in a psychiatrist's chair, and he's like a Freudian character. Look, I'm telling the cat that if you want to be free from all four forms of pain, sorrow and distress, you have to stop being so involved in your own life, which is basically what you're saying. And so jumping back to sport and stuff, but it's like you can't be perfect until you're perfect. I mean, you can't be full. The bucket can't be full until it's full, right? So in the process of filling it, by definition, the bucket isn't full. And so I've spotted this a little while back. You know that lovely example when was it Anand Kishore ate the ice cream without remembering Baba, and I think it was one of the centers had a first fridge in India, and he ate the ice cream without remembering Shiv Baba, and he was mortified. And I've heard different versions of the story, but it was something like, you know, Baba sent him a message saying, don't worry, child. The children are ocean of mistakes, and one more is not going to make much difference. And I'm sending orders for the sister to make a second batch of this delicious ice cream, and this time, do make sure you remember Shiv Baba. And I thought, you know, it's so nice. So, you know, what you were saying about not beating yourself up and all, you know, having compassion and kindness to yourself. And the reality is we can only inch forward. There's a part of us which
maybe it's the bit that's experienced perfection that knows I cracked it, but that's not realistic when I'm coming from here and moving back to perfection. And I think it's a real banana skin for Brahmins. It was for me. It's like expecting too much of yourself. So I think just small, slow, incremental steps is really good. Some of you might have come across a book called Tiny Habits. It's a behavioral psychologist guy from America. And his thing is, you can just do something very, very small, but make it consistent and constant, and then you just build up, which is basically what Baba says. And I started some while back thinking, look, let's face it, come on, let's get be honest. Rarely how self-conscious am I throughout the day? I mean, I'm talking about it, I'm thinking about it, I'm reading about it, but actually, come on, let's be honest. Actually, how long am I actually in this state of self-consciousness? Because then I wouldn't react and all the other stuff. So I started thinking, well, any little addition to my self-consciousness is a big plus. So instead of thinking, oh God, you know, an hour's meditation and my mind was all over the space, so blah, 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 I'm thinking, wow, you were really focused for 1 minute. And in this book, you know, you go in the mirror and go, yes! So you acknowledge your victory, and that raises your energy up. And then that carries forward for the next time. I mean, this caught my attention being a retired dentist. This guy ridiculously flossed one tooth. He was having trouble flossing his teeth, so he just did one tooth a day, which is ridiculous. Even he says, this is ridiculous, isn't it? Plus, he did one tooth a day for about a month, and every time he did it, he goes to the mirror, and I've started doing this, he goes, yes, well done, you've done it, great, victory. Come on, one tooth. And that kind of energy built up, and then, pleased to say, he's now flossing his teeth. So I've kind of adopted this little tiny habits thing with self-consciousness. So instead of beating myself up about what I haven't done, just focus on something that, gosh, you know, I mean, those of you who know me, I work with kids and I'm from Liverpool and I'm a bit chatty, a bit conversationalist. And so I have to sit in meetings, you know, when we're in the meetings, and I sometimes just have to sit there saying, David, be quiet, be essenceful, don't say anything, don't say anything, keep quiet, let someone else say it, and if they really don't bring it up, you can bring it up at the end of the meeting, because it's a habit. Everything's a habit, and who's created the habits? You know, I have, so we can change them. So I'm just finding this so helpful. And it's not, otherwise it's too over, well, for me, it's too overwhelming to be 100% soul conscious now, when I'm not. I mean, it's a bit Walter Mitty, isn't it? It's like you're in a make-believe world inside our head. And I think it's really nice to work with reality, that this is my situation. Not in a negative sense, because in sport, the guys that win believe that they can win in spite of. Like my team, Liverpool, won in the 99th minute, the 9th minute of extra time, which is and the headlines are, they'll never give up, you know? You haven't lost until the final whistle is blown, and until the final whistle is blown, there is still a chance of winning or not losing. And I thought, what a great mindset. So, sorry to bring up football, guys, but you know.
Yeah, I like that aspect, that everything is a habit. And even identifying with our traumas is a habit. So really to see that we can take that one step at a time as you're sharing and just de-identify and identify with something deeper in ourselves in a way.
But yeah. Don't you think, I mean, if there is, I mean, we have been traumatized.
Mm.
So body consciousness is well, it's trauma. You're traumatizing yourself because we're out of our truth. And so I'm finding at our NC, you know, coordinators meeting recently, it was so authentic. It was just so refreshing. And I think I don't think it's being negative identifying traumas or identifying weaknesses.
Mm.
If I then decide, right, I've spotted it, I've labelled it, maybe I can see behind it. And I find it useful if I do react to actually, maybe not at that time, but look back and see what were the conditions that made me more likely to react, like, you know, I was tired or whatever. So then you can think, okay, so I can make steps to do something differently next time.
Mm.
You know that expression, what is it? Pain is compulsory and suffering is optional, or something like that. So I think, you know, pain is compulsory, or it's offered to you, and experiencing the sorrow from trauma is probably a choice, unless you've got a physical condition, and it's a bit of it's a delicate topic, because some of Baba's children do have a physical condition, you know, where they experience trauma and things you say trigger things. So that's a little bit different. But I think we can just change around and say, okay, but can I stop feeling so bad about the negative stuff? And if I can't do it 100%, can I just experience 75% feeling awful, or you know, 95%, that's a 5% decrease in feeling awful. Now, if you flip that over, that's a pretty good success. And you know, like flossing one tooth, it's a springboard to do something different.
But at least you're giving it a chance. I mean, you're to identify it, this is what I heard, and see it.
Label it.
Because Maya doesn't want to be seen.
Yeah.
It wants you to feel guilty and shame and all of that. But then on the other hand, I heard something. What was it? Mohini Didi in Avyakti Pariva. Oh, I make Maya my friend. Something like this. In the sense of demystifying even this Maya business, you know, that yes, it comes to say goodbye, like you said, to win or learn.
Yeah.
Isn't that a different whole way of looking at our Brahman life? So we're never losing. And that makes me stable. That makes me feel more wholesome. I think we want, doesn't that sound nice? That we want to be whole. I want myself back.
But isn't it a bit weird? I think, doesn't Maya mean that which is not? And I'm thinking, why am I putting so much energy in trying to fight with something that's in its, by its nature, is illusory? And, you know, Baba talks about, and Mohini Didi talks a lot about this on the Avyakti Pariva. You know, I can be battling out in my acquired stuff and all the outside of the bullseye, but if I can just move into the middle, that original, pure, eternal me, which we all have, when you touch that, it just feels so nice. You don't want to come out of that. And that's, but for me, the the practical day-to-day thing is that does happen. I've experienced that, and it's beautiful and liberating and gorgeous. And it doesn't happen for me every day. And so I feel, for me anyway, I've got to be looking at the times when I'm not in my original eternal stage, which is probably a lot of the time. And I've got to be practical and work with that and gradually increase my percentage of feeling less lousy most of the time. No. And in my experience, it works. This stuff works. If I think where I was, 40, 30 years ago, even 20 years, and even actually I feel complete. I was lucky enough to be in Madhavan in October for the Peace of Mind retreat. I feel completely different to then. In fact, I feel different to yesterday. Because the reality is, none of us are the same, are we? I mean, we're different when we walk off this stage, aren't we? And you guys, every time we go into a Morley and come out, we're different. And yet, there's a bit of us that's holding this old me. And it doesn't exist anymore, does it? Does it? Am I being delusory?
I was just going to share a story of trauma that I witnessed. In San Francisco, it was 1989, October 17th, when the earthquake happened. Do you remember that? I was downtown, a couple of blocks from the ferry building, outside, walking to the bus. And then the earthquake happened, and I was a new BK, so I just beamed up to Baba, and I had a great time. And I found a telephone, a light post to stand by. And then I witnessed every type of sanskar that you could imagine, and this is a traumatic event. It happened quickly, but so much happened in that moment. One man, and they were digging the street, so there were these 6-foot wide trenches. He ran across the street, cussing every word, angry, 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 his papers flying everywhere. Another man in the distance opened his arms. He had a briefcase, he had a suit. Opens his arms, and the women in front of him felt his energy, turned around as if it was choreographed, turned around and went under his arms at the next light post. It was like you wouldn't have believed it if you staged it, you know? And then some people went under the building ledge, which is the most stupidest thing you could do because all the glass could... Anyway, then it finished, and I went, oh. Okay. And I thought, well, nothing's working, right? The electricity isn't down. Smoke from the dust of the buildings. And I'm walking along, and I'm just like a little bird, like a fly. I don't know what, you know how you want to be a fly on the wall? You know, just observer? I was totally in observer mode. And I see people coming from the underground. And I saw them coming out with disbelief that everything was still standing. And that was their mode. Then I come down to an intersection, and I've been walking for at least 10 minutes. And there's a Latina mother and her 10-year-old sobbing uncontrollably in the middle of the intersection. Just like that, you know. But just, okay. I cross the street. These two bikers come out. They're the messengers. They do all the, they deliver messages from office to office. And they go, hey, Peter, yeah, where were you? Oh, yeah, that was so cool. Oh, you know, like, let's do it again. For them, it was a fun ride. And then, as I walked on, I saw people helping people. Like they rose to the occasion, directing traffic, ordinary clothed people. And people helping people. And then everybody, because it was a hot day, was picnicking. Anyway, where I'm going with this is, okay, I can choose how I want to witness even those traumatic events, but I have to let it shake. I have to let it do what it needs to do. And you could almost use that as a metaphor for, you know, why the cycle has to turn. It has to shake. And Baba's given us this blessing of knowing the drama and time and past, even just past, present, and future, so that we can ride the waves. And in our equilibrium, in our calmness, as much, whether it's 95% or 10%, it's going to help someone. And, you know, just to remain above the drama. And that's just one thought as we near the end. But Lota, because she's
great at this.
No. I enjoy what has been said. What I hear David is that to be, you know, grounded and honest, because it's easy to come into Brahmi life and fly with all the ideas, and it's actually very much based on bhakti ideas. And thinking, now I'm safe, so now I should be perfect because God is with me. And then I get surprised that I react. And then I feel horrible that I react because it shouldn't happen, because I should be perfect. So all of these ideas is easily up here. But to come down to the ground and to accept myself and to accept my feelings and my reactions, I feel is where I have to. I can only start from where I am. But I often found in the past I tried to be somewhere else and be like somebody else, and it made me feel very unauthentic. So I feel this, what is coming up is from both of you, is the authenticity. And then and I feel that when I find my feet in the present, I don't worry about the future or worry about what other people think of me. It's like I find myself, I find Baba, and where is my next step? And what you were saying also, Baba has said in Murli several times that remember me in drops. So collect the drops of remembrance and let them increase. And he often used the word sada, meaning constant. So the constancy is more important than doing fantastic impression of effort. So the regularity, but that takes maturity, it takes patience, it takes love on a very deep level and not being hysterical. So, yeah.
I'm getting signal that the time is up.
I'm just thinking, I'm listening to myself now talk like this, but some years ago I wouldn't be talking like this. I'd be, because I'm just thinking, I have to kind of remind myself what I was like X number of years ago when I first came in. I was a bit of a, what I call a space cadet, you know. But looking back now, I can see, yeah, I've changed, and all of us are changing, and anyone even coming in now, we just, it's change. So it's not that you come straight to this stage, I guess that's what I'm saying. Yeah. You know, it's taken time, but I think that's okay.
Yeah, I just like to end off with that aspect, that definitely there's just a feeling of the family maturing, you know, and I think even the IR retreat, the feeling was that we've been on this journey a long time, and I think everyone is wanting our Brahman life to be authentic, but also to be very real and to be grounded in something that's true for the self in that way. And it's lovely to see this collective wave unfolding within the family, and that we can feel safe with each other, that we can have a conversation like this. So thank you very, very much. And I think it's a good point now for us to just have some yoga together. Thank you very much, Shanti.